When the time came, she was lying on the bed before the door. At her right hand stood the godfather, Ivan Ivanovich Hiroshkin, a very important person who was registrar of the Senate. At her left, the godmother, Anna Semyonova Bilobrushkova, the wife of a police inspector, a woman of rare virtues. Three names were suggested to the mother from which to choose one for the child. Moikiova, Soisia, or Hostesat.
No,
she said.
I don't like such names.
In order to meet her wishes, the church calendar was opened in another place, and the names Trifili, Dula, and Varhasi were found.
This is a punishment from heaven,
said the mother.
What sort of names are these? I never heard the like. If it had been Varadat or Varuch, but Trifili and Varahazi.
They looked again in the calendar and found Pavsikahi and Vatisi.
Now I see,
said the mother.
This is plainly fate. If there is no help for it, then he had better take his father's name, which was Akaki.
So the child was called Akaki Akakievich. It was baptized. Although it wept and cried and made all kinds of grimaces, as though it had a presentiment that it would one day be a titular consular. We have related all this so conscientiously that the reader himself might be convinced that it was impossible for the little Akaki to receive any other name. When and how he entered the chancellery and who appointed him, no one could remember. However many of his superiors might come and go, he was always seen in the same spot, in the same attitude, busy with the same work, and bearing the same title, so that people began to believe he had come into the world just as he was, with his bald forehead and official uniform. In the chancellery where he worked, no kind of notice was taken of him. Even the office attendants did not rise from their seats when he entered, nor look at him. They took no more notice than if a fly had flown through the room. His superiors treated him in a coldly despotic manner. The assistant of the head of the department, when he pushed a pile of papers under his nose, did not even say,
"Please copy those."
Or,
"There is something interesting for you."
Or make any other polite remark, such as well-educated officials are in the habit of doing. But Akaki took the documents, without worrying himself whether they had the right to hand them over to him or not, and straightway set to work to copy them. His young colleagues made him the butt of their ridicule and their elegant wit, so far as officials can be said to possess any wit. They did not scruple to relate in his presence various tales of their own invention regarding his manner of life and his landlady, who was 70 years old. They declared that she beat him and inquired of him when he would lead her to the marriage altar. Sometimes they let a shower of scraps of paper fall on his head and told him they were snowflakes. But Akaki Akakievich made no answer to all these attacks. He seemed oblivious of their presence. His work was not affected in the slightest degree. During all these interruptions, he did not make a single error in copying. Only when the horseplay grew intolerable, when he was held by the arm and prevented writing, he would say,
"Do leave me alone. Why do you always want to disturb me at work?"
There was something peculiarly pathetic in these words, and the way in which he uttered them. One day it happened that when a young clerk, who had been recently appointed to the chancellery, prompted by the example of the others, was playing him some trick, he suddenly seemed arrested by something in the tone of Akaki's voice, and from that moment regarded the old official with quite different eyes. He felt as though some supernatural power drew him away from the colleagues whose acquaintance he had made here, and whom he had hitherto regarded as well-educated, respectable men, and alienated him from them.